Go Loud.
Him and Donald Trump trying to have a conversation.
Yeah, I imagine this room of Nobel Peace Prize winners, and Trump walks in and everyone shows, oh, they let anyone in here. No, no, hear me out. Hear me out. I know it sounds crazy, but what if
they appointed a housing czar, then he stood back, now we don't have one.
Have the Bolsheviks deposed the housing czar.
Everybody, and welcome to your favourite news podcast, A Few Scoops with me. And you would be forgiven, they think Pedro Pascal had walked into the studio with his new haircut, but it is in fact the daddy of this podcast, Colm O'Regan.
Yes, I shouldn't leave so much time elapsed between haircuts. I've realised I'm on video every week now and it's just more noticeable. I got my summer haircut.
Yeah.
It should see me through until the autumn.
And then you'll get the winter coat on and time continues to move at pace. This week, Colm, we're going to talk about housing.
Oh, good. I thought we'd get something that would have a bit of get the banter going.
Yeah. So, as you know, the current government have tried nothing and they're all out of ideas. And they have a new nothing that they've come up with. This week, Housing Minister James Brown said he wants to change the rules for new apartment buildings. He says that this will reignite construction in the sector. Just to give the other side of it, an architect was on RT Morning Ireland yesterday, Orla Hegarty, contradicting that very point. So the changes that Minister Brown wants to see would see an apartment mix which will allow more one bedroom and studios in a building. No communal facilities will be needed or required on a mandatory basis. That's luxuries, you know, like a courtyard, some green space, got rid of child's park. Minimum sizes of apartments are set to get smaller, so the current rules require the majority of apartments in a block to exceed a minimum size by 10%. The new guidelines will reduce this requirement from a majority to a minimum of 25% of apartments. And dual aspect ratios. This, I think, is probably the grimmest part of the new rules.
So what's a dual aspect ratio?
The current guidelines require at least 33% of a dual aspect in urban locations and 50% in suburban locations. That means it has windows on two external walls. The new guidelines will create a single standard of 25%. That means in your studio apartment, you might have one window.
Okay, so no window in the kitchen, say, and then
yes,
a window in the living room, depending on
or
how
a one bed apartment, you could just have one window.
Okay.
It is incredibly grim. The government have said that there'll be no changes or downgrading to fire standards, accessibility, and key environmental standards. Minister Brown, who hypes himself up as a kind of radical minister, he said that this would aim to reduce the cost of an apartment by 50 to 100 grand. Now, as I said, architects have previously said that this actually wouldn't. You might be able to stuff in a few more apartments, but those apartments will be grimmer. And bear in mind that under Minister Brown as well, new apartments are no longer part of rent pressure zones. They will be tied to the rate of inflation capped at 2%.
Is this because developers are saying they can't make money, their margins are tight, and the standards mean they're not making money, so they're not even bothering to get into the market? Like, is this one of the problems?
They're saying it's too expensive. It's very expensive to build apartments. However, shoving in more of these apartments isn't going to change cost of the building. So
yeah, but if you're in a given building, though, won't you be able to sell more units? Like, let's say these reduced standards lead to a increase of single digits percent in the number of apartments per building, so won't you be able to sell more, make more money, therefore you're more likely to do it? Like, is that some of the reasoning?
That's some of the reasoning, absolutely. However, we know that there's 163,000 empty properties across Ireland at the minute, and opposition parties who obviously are going to oppose the government's policy. Oh no, Bren from Sinn Féin said, reducing minimum apartment sizes means renters paying higher rents for smaller and darker apartments, but does nothing to increase the supply of housing or reduce the cost of rent. This isn't the first time a government has done this. This is not a Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil thing only. When Alan Kelly from the Labour Party was housing minister, he slashed apartment sizes in 2015. And then, God be with the days, Fine Gael housing minister Owen Murphy, he did the same 3 years later. So we are continually reducing apartment sizes and slashing these guidelines, which does increase developers' profits. However, what opposition parties and housing experts and Focus Ireland and all the other housing charities are saying, it's not developer-led policy that they would be looking for, it's social housing.
Okay, so social housing, so the money, let's say the money isn't, the money to build isn't as big an issue. Remind us again why we don't build lots of social housing in this country.
So the target of delivering 12,000 social homes every year just 2 months ago was called not feasible by local authorities. They said in the management of all 31 county and city councils, they told the housing committee that they would need more suitably zoned land, higher staff levels in local authorities, and more streamlined processes. So the local councils have told the government what they need to build these social housing. We are going to miss our social housing targets again. And we know, if you ask any housing expert, they will tell you that the people who should be in social housing, who qualify for social housing, a lot of them are in private rent because there isn't enough social housing, which then pushes rent prices upwards. So I say, for me as a renter in Dublin, I am then in competition with someone who's on the housing list or should be in a council house, and then they push the rent up. And because I'm paying so much in rent, I can't save for a mortgage. Therefore, I'm not able to buy a house. So everything has a knock-on effect.
Okay, so a moron like me asks, you know, years and years ago, they built Crumlin and Drimna and Merino and all of those. Mm-hmm. And they definitely had more than one window. And
lovely
built,
houses.
Yeah, so they built thousands of houses with no money. And then even in the boom in 2006, was there like 90,000 homes built or finished in that year? So something fundamentally is different now. Like, it's one of the things Labour, that there aren't enough builders.
We often talk about building shortages, and this is the other thing. Like, it has to be a wraparound issue. So if there is a lack of builders, obviously people who are involved in trade can get in touch with me, but if there is a lack of builders, for instance, Australia will advertise that they need nurses. I have a member of my family who became a teacher because the British government needed English teachers, and they paid off his student loans for him to become an English teacher. So we declared a housing emergency like a decade ago. Well, maybe a bit less than a decade ago. And if we knew that we needed builders then, now I would say everyone, half of the people that we needed are probably in Australia now. But if that was the case, you know, then apprenticeships should have been promoted a lot sooner than when Simon Harris got into the Department of Higher Education. You know, there needs to be some joined up thinking here about, if it is builders, can we bring builders from other European countries? Surely that's a good point of being in the EU, is that we can have that free labour market. Like, there are solutions to this. I'm not a TD or a housing expert, but I just think, I have a list here of all the things that we've dealt with over the last year when it comes to housing, when it comes to government policy. Remember, we were told that renting sheds, that was going to help. So you could rent a shed in your ma's backyard, and if your ma was lucky enough to have a backyard and you were lucky enough to have a ma, you could rent a shed. You didn't need planning permission to rent a shed. Sure, that's not going to lead to anything bad. The housing czar that never was, they appointed a housing czar, then he stood back. Now we don't have one.
Have the Bolsheviks deposed the housing czar? They have. Is he back in the latest? He or she back in the latest?
No. There's no housing czar. No. Yeah. They're getting rid of rent pressure zones, which Focus Ireland said is going to make more people homeless. And now they've decided to make apartments smaller. We've talked about this a lot, and I totally despair. This isn't a political thing for me. I don't care about who is the housing minister. I have no preference. I just genuinely feel, from a scientific evidentiary point of view, you're being told constantly your policy's not working. For the last decade, it's not been working. Why are you continuing this?
And assuming that this isn't part of some Machiavellian plan to bring in George Soros, the World Economic Foundation, and computer chips in our vaccine, what is the fundamental thinking problem that's going on? Like, So they don't want to build social housing because what? They don't want to...
There's no votes in it.
There's no votes. But wouldn't there be votes in it?
Like, I think there would be noise. Yeah. So I remember years
ago... there's enough people now.
I was in Leinster House around the time of Programme for Government Negotiations in 2020, and I spoke to a TD, a new TD, who was in those negotiations and said to me, within Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, there is this obsession with people owning their own homes, which is obviously a very valid aim for political parties. But she said, you know, people owning their own homes is not the issue. The issue facing us is that there are thousands of children in hotels. We need to build social housing. She said that they were obsessed with the notion of people owning their own houses, but they were not obsessed with building houses.
Yeah.
Like the government building houses, because then the government would be building, obviously, social housing. You could be very cynical and say they don't think there's any votes in it. When you look at places around the inner city in Cork and inner city in Dublin, they think there's no votes in it, so why would they bother? Which is why I think I'm always harping on that people need to vote. But I think some of this is absolute arrogance. We have to dig our heels in now because we've been pushing this wagon for so long.
It's like
we can't admit we're wrong.
We can't have women priests because we said we can't have women priests.
Exactly.
So we can't have social housing at scale because
we said we couldn't.
We said we couldn't. But I really think there's votes in it.
So do I.
You know, and like people don't vote because you didn't build the houses.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So to conclude that there's no point in building houses because people in social housing don't vote, like that's kind of has the argument arse way.
And I'm not saying so people in social housing don't vote, but they think that people in social housing don't vote for their parties, which for the most part is true. If you look at the polling and you look at, you know, where people sit in the class system, they don't tend to vote for Fianna Fáil.
But they used to vote for Fianna Fáil.
Oh, yes, they did. Yeah. And then Sinn Féin came along and we Labour and started eating their lunch.
So the most frustrating thing now is not the scale of the problem or indeed the depth of the suffering. It's that we're headed in the wrong direction. There is no corner being turned.
There's a saying that if you're on the wrong train, get off at the quickest available stop, even if it's embarrassing, even if you feel like an idiot. And they're not talking about trains.
Unless it's Limerick Junction. But I would stay on until Killarney. In that case, just see if I get a train back to somewhere else. Sorry, I distract you from your point.
And
but
on
yes,
that note, we'll move on. So I just want to give a trigger warning for this story. It's hard when we're making this podcast, you know what to include and whatnot, because some stories are so grim and the point of our podcast is that we want people engaged and we don't want to turn people off. But some stories are so heinous and so important to talk about. I posted this story on my Instagram the other day and I had so many messages from people saying they hadn't heard anything about this. And I just felt it was important to mention it. And just giving a trigger warning now, this is that we are going to be mentioning sexual assault. So if you want to turn it off and skip a couple of minutes, definitely do that. Last week, a former Garda was convicted for impersonating a female colleague in the Gardaí to incite men to come to her house and rape her and kill her. Shane Flanagan, with an address in County Clare, he was 39. He impersonated the woman on a fetish website and Facebook for the purpose of arranging for people to come to her home and rape her. He created accounts using the woman's personal information, shared details including her address, photos of her, and photos of her daughters. Prosecuting the case, we heard that the woman and Flanagan were friends, and there had never been any romantic or sexual history between them. Not that that matters. The woman was extremely shocked to find out that Flanagan was the one who'd been impersonator online. She said in court, "If you gave me a list of 500 names of people that could have done this to me, I would have never guessed it was him." He pled guilty to 2 counts of inciting 2 men to rape the woman on dates between November and December in 2020. He also pled guilty to 1 count of possession of 4 images of child sexual abuse. Reading her victim impact statement, the woman said that as a fellow Garda, he was someone she trusted and called a friend and was supposed to uphold the same professional values. Not only that, but he plotted to have her and her daughters attacked and planned for men to find us and carry out unspeakable acts of violence. She said it was a betrayal of friendship and a betrayal beyond words. Stories like this terrify people. And I think what it says to me anyway, is that no woman is safe. You can say this man's a monster and he's obviously not right in the head, but he is right in the head. And he isn't a monster. He is a normal person. He's actually more than a normal person. He is a policeman. He is charged with upholding safety and peace in the community. And this was not something he did when he was pushed or in a crime of passion. This was a calculated act he did soberly over a number of months. And it would remind you of the French case of Madame Pellicot. But I was just taken aback at the horrificness of this case.
Yeah, this kind of case falls under, I didn't know that level of fuckery was possible. Also, the readily available, the sites he was visiting. This is an example where it feels like people who have a proclivity to do something awful have now been handed weapons to exacerbate the kind of latent awfulness. You know, it's like the intrusive thoughts that people have. What if I was awful? But I can't. I don't have the opportunity. But now there are, whatever, sites. There are other people who feel that this, you know, the community he was joining in terms of inducing them to come and attack this woman, obviously like-minded people. So he's not a lone wolf. He felt this was a place I could suggest this stuff.
Yeah. So two of the users of the fetish website actually assisted Gardy. So they interacted with Flanagan while he was pretending to be the woman and provided statements. Flanagan incited them to break into the woman's house and rape her. Both genuinely believed they were talking to the woman who had a fetish for CNC, which is called, consensual non-consent. I mean, like, the fact that that's a fetish is so, so utterly disturbing. And this isn't me kink shaming, because if your kink is women pretending they don't want to have sex, your kink is rape.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you think it's a woman asking for that. You should probably not participate. Yeah.
For a Garda to be convicted of something like this, I know the victim was also a Garda, but, you know, only through people coming forward, you know, years ago people would have thought, I can't go to the guards because he's a guard. And I think cases like this, and talking about cases like this, there will be people listening to this podcast now who are in a violent relationship or are being stalked. And even if you think the person has more power than you, these cases, these convictions show that it doesn't matter. That you can and you should go and talk to the Gardaí, trust your gut. And also there are places like Women's Aid and Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, because it's so, so grim to talk about these things and it's horrific, but we have to be aware of it because there are people suffering this right now who feel like they're on their own and they're not.
Brilliant.
If you've been affected by this story, help is available. Contact Dublin's Rape Crisis Centre National 24-hour helpline on 1-800-77-8888. And one further thing is, I often say I'm going to recommend things to watch or do or see on this podcast and I always forget, but there is now a documentary which will be on Sky. It's a Sky original documentary. It's called Death of a Show Jumper, and it is about the murder of a young woman in County Derry called Katie Sampson. It was a huge case in the north, but I don't think a lot of people would know about it in the Republic. It is about the ability of local journalism to investigate when they have a hunch that something is wrong. It is a testimony to nurses who raise the red flag about domestic and intimate partner violence and about the failures of the PSNI. It will be a tough watch, but I would really recommend the 16th of July on Sky and Now TV to watch Death of a Show Jumper. Colm, are you ready for a bit of nostalgia?
Always. I'm genetically at the perfect age for nostalgia. For me, it's anything from 1982 until 2002, or maybe 2012.
Guess who's back?
It couldn't be, could it?
Tony Blair.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
Tony Blair. You know Tony Blair from the Iraq War. So Tony Blair, when he left politics, started a number of foundations, etc., as they all do. Tony Blair's think tank worked with a project developing a post-war Gaza plan that included the creation of Trump Riviera and a manufacturing zone named after Elon Musk. The project is led by Israeli business people, but they use financial models developed by the US consultant firm Boston Consulting Group and has been developed against Donald Trump's visions of taking over the Palestinian territory and transforming it into a resort. Tony Blair's Institute for Global Change. That is so funny considering Tony Blair's role in history.
Yeah, I mean, he's not wrong. It is an institute.
He has created some global change himself. Tony Blair's Institute for Global Change said it was not involved in the authorship of the plan, but staff did take part in calls as the project evolved. And they're also part of a message group used for the project, along with figures from that consultancy group, the Israeli Business People, and a number of others. It was called the Gaza Economic Blueprint. Whom amongst us hasn't ended up in a WhatsApp group discussing the takeover of Gaza?
Yeah. Like, can you imagine the messages that were deleted in that group where there's like, no, that's too much, that's too much. Like, it's the banality of it. Boston Consulting Group. So they, a couple of their partners, is this right?
Yes.
Were involved in the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, this aid group.
An Israeli and US-backed Israeli aid group.
Aid group, yeah.
An aid group makes it sound like it's a good thing.
I know. NGOs at it again. And so they're responsible for those awful food queues where people are being fired on. So now the Boston Consulting Group, they distanced themselves from...
They have fired two of their staff.
Okay.
So this is like a WhatsApp group full of some of the worst people on earth discussing how to ethnically cleanse an occupied territory, move the Gazans out of there and turn it into the Trump Riviera.
And like all good projects, there was a slide deck.
Of course.
You know, and it, like, I used to work in consulting and
in those days
I'd work in projects like IT projects for the government, and your biggest fear would be ending up on Liveline. We'd say things like, look, I'm not going to have too many slides now. We don't want death by PowerPoint. And this literally is death by PowerPoint.
Death by PowerPoint, and Tony Blair's involved.
Well, Tony Blair's institute.
Yeah, so to be fair to Tony Blair, which is words that I never, ever say, but to be fair to Tony Blair, he has claimed Tony Blair himself has neither spoken to the people who prepared the deck nor commented on it. They speak to many different groups and organisations with post-war and in inverted commas plans for Gaza, but it had nothing to do with the authorship of this plan. I mean, Tony Blair, that's not a man who would lie.
No.
Can we not take Tony Blair at his word anymore?
Even if you're the most cynical person in the world and you don't give a shit about anything, surely your consulting spidey sense, when presented with a project about post-war in Gaza, would go, you know what?
Mm.
On the phone, in a way that couldn't be tracked, you'd say, you know what? I love it, but right now we're absolutely slammed with post-Ukraine war stuff.
Yeah.
Or we're working with Putin closely. Like, you'd admit to that.
You would just
run a mile. Like, is sales that important? Like, I guarantee those two partners must have been aiming for promotion. Like, that's the kind of thing you would do, going, look, we'll just get through this post-war situation and then I'll coast.
And I think, like, last week I talked about the window of acceptability, and when Trump first said the words about a Trump Riviera and talked about, you know, the plans to, you know, change up Gaza, everyone was mortified, shocked, just thought, how could he say this? But once he says these things, they become somewhat acceptable because the initial shock wears off.
Yeah.
And then you find, no matter how craven the thing is, whether it's turning Gaza into Riviera, whether it's, you know, ethnic cleansing of people, once the initial shock wears off, it makes it more acceptable. And there are always going to be people with a slide deck ready.
Yeah. And that sentence, that paragraph that begins with the phrase, no, hear me out. Hear me out. I know it sounds crazy, but what if, I mean, talking about saying the unsayable and moving the window of acceptability, we are in another new frontier. A drone has flown in the window of acceptability, shot someone and flown out another window because it was a dual aspect apartment. Because Netanyahu, is this right? Has he nominated or suggested Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize?
So Benjamin Netanyahu told Donald Trump that he would nominate the US president for the Nobel Peace Prize on Monday. Trump and Netanyahu met for the first time since the Iran missile attack, and Trump was expected to press Netanyahu for a ceasefire in the 21-month war against Gaza. And this morning we have heard that Benjamin Netanyahu will be handing in the papers for his buddy old pal Donald Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm sure John Hume is looking down.
Yeah, the work I had to do.
Yeah, could you imagine John Hume and Donald Trump trying to have a conversation?
Yeah, I imagine this room of Nobel Peace Prize winners and Trump walks in and everyone shows, oh, they let anyone in here.
But it's true. Yeah. They would.
And I guarantee you when, again, people start talking about it and go, no, hear me out. So what they'll say things like, he stopped the war between India and Pakistan, even though India and Pakistan said nothing to do with him. Mm-hmm. Oh, he brokered something between Rwanda and Congo, even though he would struggle, well, classic liberal sneering, struggle to place those countries on a map. But also,
we need to remember he also called them shithole countries.
That's right. Yeah. Not them specifically, just all of the countries.
All of Africa.
Between the Tropic of Capricorn and the Tropic of Cancer, I think. And what else did he resolve? There was some other war. Oh, Ukraine. That's right.
Yeah,
Ukraine.
Even though people are still being bombed to bits.
Yeah, but again, people forget. You see, the thing is, centrist dad, the thing is, what you don't understand, he does want something like the Nobel Peace Prize.
He does.
Because he wants acceptance into the thing he says he despises the most, which is the liberal elite.
It's the reason he used to phone the New York Times all the time when he was a real estate developer. Donald Trump wants nothing more than to be accepted. If people had to be nicer to him about The Apprentice, he wouldn't be the president.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has the personality of a drag queen. He has missed his calling in life. He is so catty, so funny, so perfect for the stage that if people had just given him a bit more attention, yeah, he wouldn't be the president.
And he takes things very personally, which is why Obama, who's also back in the news, why he did cause Trump to go to become president by slagging him off at the White House correspondence dude.
Yeah, and now you say it, nostalgia again. Barack Obama, the king of the centrist dads, is headed for the Three Arena in Dublin. He is going to be interviewed by Ireland's own centrist dad, Fintan O'Toole of the Irish Times. You can pay €2,000 and you might get a photograph with him. So it's not even guaranteed that you'd get the photo.
People have never heard of AI and the ability to just put themselves in. Like, you can go on the Facebook Photoshop group and say, can you Photoshop me in with Barack Obama in a photo, and somebody for free will put you in a video getting the Nobel Peace Prize from Barack Obama. Why you pay $2,000 for a grainy shot?
Yeah. So Friday the 26th of September, he'll be in Dublin and in London. And I just had a little Google this morning because I was just trying to look at, you know, different things about Barack Obama. And I often wonder, will Fintan O'Toole ask Barack Obama about the fact that there were 10 times more airstrikes in his presidency than there were in George W. Bush's? 563 airstrikes, largely by drones, targeted Pakistan, Somalia and Yemen, compared to 57 under Bush. They reckon about between 400 and 800 civilians were killed in those countries, but they cannot be sure. This was all in the so-called war on terror. Obama insisted that the drone strikes were exceptionally surgical and precise, that they wouldn't put innocent men, women and children in danger. However, this claim has been contested by numerous human rights organisations, and the Bureau's figures on civilian casualties also demonstrate that this is not the case. Listen, I understand why people look at Barack Obama and pine for a time when Barack Obama was the president. He was the first black president. He was so, at times, genuine. He seemed human. He was working class, gorgeous wife, gorgeous kids, real respectable. But I think the days of respect and American imperialism are over.
But in the against the standards of starting two wars, of course, he did go into Libya, which was a disaster, ill thought out, didn't prosecute Syria properly over chemical weapons, underestimated Putin, all of that. In the standards of general American presidents, like is it futile to expect an American president not to send drones into the desert?
Like, the only president that never dropped a bomb was Jimmy Carter. He was the only president never to drop a bomb, and he was absolutely torn apart for it. Yeah. Unlike the people he didn't tear apart. Listen, I understand why people, like, as I said, there is a nostalgia around Obama. We pined for a time that was more respectable, but just because it was more respectable doesn't mean that people in foreign countries didn't die. Remembering also that weapons were shipped to Israel and a number of other countries during Obama's terms, and I just think we should be striving for better.
Yeah. I know, I guess, I just think it's been so bad. Like,
yeah.
I'm still nostalgic. I won't go. We'll pay $2,000 for a photo.
Is there anyone in the world you would pay $2,000 to get your photo taken with?
No. Like the concept, I just couldn't do it. But like, I don't know, it's nostalgia, but it's also, it's nostalgia for when the president was a different type of likable. Maybe nostalgia for competence.
Mm.
You know, everybody's bad, but you want them competent. Like, I don't think they would have anybody in their cabinet in the Obama years who would have, you know, texted Yemeni war plans to a journalist. I mean, WhatsApp wasn't around then. It would have been all on their Nokia 55.
Or BBM. Do you remember BlackBerry Messenger?
It passed me by. I skipped the technology. I went straight from Nokia to the first iPhone.
Oh no, I had BlackBerry Messenger. It was very swish at the time.
Yeah. So anyway, we're not dissuading anybody from going, just in case there's an ad for Obama 3 Arena on in the middle of this.
So up next at A Few Scoops, we have the sport.
I've been allowed to do a sports story. And in fact, there might even be two in this episode. So once again, the identity of the podcast has been eroded by male obsession with sport. Failing upwards and male mediocrity. No. go on. I'm just saying the things you want to say. So I like this story. This is from the hurling semi-final at the weekend. Croke Park, Kilkenny versus Tipperary. It's, do you know what? It's good old-fashioned blunder, bit of human error, and that's fine. These things happen. But just to give the background, Tip were leading by, I think it was 3 points, and then Noel McGrath hit a shot that went wide. One umpire waved it wide. But then the other umpire, and people think this is what happened, in a little, it's coming towards the end of the match, flourish, caught the slitter in his left hand. And it's possible that that raised hand caused, just possible, there's an official report to come out, caused maybe the scoreboard operator to think that it was a point. So one umpire is doing one thing.
Yeah.
This is the wide symbol, isn't it? Never been an umpire. And then the other one has got his hand raised.
So he like raises a point.
Yeah, like there was 60-something scores in the game. Maybe he just reflexively, he or she reflexively pressed the button to record. Because, you know, you can have automated scoring and all that.
So the scoreboard was wrong then?
Scoreboard was wrong. The referee was right, because the referee took note of the other umpire.
Well done.
But the thing is that if you're a player in the heat of battle and you're kind of looking up, what's the biggest thing you can see around is the giant scoreboard. So there is an argument that says that Kilkenny thought they were further behind than they were. Therefore, they needed to get a goal rather than chip away at the points. And therefore, their strategy in the last couple of minutes might have been different. They mightn't have gone for goals. They might have got points. The oldest adage in the GAA, apart from for feck's sake ref, is take the points and the goals will come kind of thing. But if you think you don't have time. And there's no huge truth to be got from this, except that often in life, if we think we have less time than we do, we change how we do things. So if you've got a deadline, then you change how you approach it. Whereas if you had a bit more time, it's like exams. If the exam gets suddenly postponed, you know, your study pattern changes, which is that you postpone your study for a day and then you cram the night before the new deadline.
What happens now?
Nothing happens. There's no replay or anything like that, because the last time there was a replay, it was about 20-something years ago, Clare and Offaly. The referee blew the whistle 2 minutes early.
Ooh.
So the match hadn't played the regulation length. So the match was deemed to have been abandoned.
Yeah.
As in they were searching for ways to replay it.
Yeah.
According to the rules. So because it was, the match didn't go to its conclusion, it was deemed to have been abandoned. So they could have a replay. But this is just,
he blew too early, did he?
Yeah, right. You know, that kind of smut. Sport is serious, Aoife. And people's, you know, people think a lot about this. And you coming in with your glib comments. Sometimes I feel you don't respect my interests. Like, I've listened to your stuff about, you know, men are awful. So I'm bringing my sport thing. So anyway, that was a different thing. So there's no replay. But in fairness, Kilkenny are not.
Who won?
Tip won by,
very good.
As it turned out, was it 2 points? and not 3 points. Kilkenny aren't complaining, or if they are, they're keeping
it under
wraps.
I'm sure some people in Kilkenny are complaining,
But I think Kilkenny being like, Kilkenny is the kind of place where young lads and young girls, you will see them walking around Kilkenny with hurleys. They say hurls. I'm from Cork, we say hurleys. They carried them in case a game breaks out. Like, it's just, it's in the blood. So therefore, they will find 1,000 other reasons why they lost the game in the pure hurling sense, rather than blaming the referee, I think. Now, fans are a bit bitter about it online.
Yeah, of course.
But,
well, if this was Derry, I'd be all over it. I'd be calling for a replay. No doubt.
Yeah, you would be seeing it as a slight. And
I'd be getting Joe Brawley on the phone.
Yeah.
I'd be.
This is going back to 1690.
Yeah, I'd be up in arms.
Yeah.
And we've given Colm 2 sections of the podcast this week. And now we're going to go to Colm's good news. What do you have for me this week?
So my good news this week, I managed to sneak another sports story in to what has been a cold house for sports previously. But this week it's bumper. But I have an excuse because it's a story from up north. And it is, I think it's a lovely story. It's a story about camaraderie. It's a story about good social media.
In the week of the 12th as well.
In the week of the 12th. Well, it was another march.
Ah!
A completely different march over the weekend. So, background. It's about the football match that was 65 years in the making. Glenavon FC were the 1959 to 1960 Irish League champions.
Good on them.
Qualified for the European Cup. And they were drawn against Erzgebirge Aue, which is everyone's favourite team from the former East Germany. So they couldn't fulfil that tie in 59 and 60, or probably 1960, because the Cold War curtain had come down across Europe.
Topical.
So there was visa issues. Now, some will say neither side would grant either side visas. I've seen commentary online saying the British wouldn't give visas to the East Germans. I'm sure there was fault on both sides. Anyway, the game was not held.
Okay.
And this is 2 generations ago.
Yes.
But a throwaway tweet by a Glenavon supporter, let me find his name, Glenavon supporters liaison officer Adam Carson posted a tweet to gauge if there was interest in replaying the match 65 years later. It got some, you know, the tweet, they reached out. You know, this is proper reaching out, not like corporate reaching out saying, thank you for reaching out, the way use a proper sentence. They reached out to the fans. Connections were made. Banter was had, solidified into replaying the European tie, the home one. So that it was in Germany last year. And last weekend, thousands of fans, or 1,100 fans, let's call it thousands, of German fans came to Glenavon, to Lurgan. And they had a special, so I think it's more, it happens more in continental teams where the ultras, where the diehard fans will march in unison with singing from whatever their gathering point is to the ground.
Like an Orange Order march.
Like an Orange Order, but they needed, so these 1,100 ultras from Erzgebirge Aue, they needed, my facility with languages is one of the cornerstones of this podcast. They marched through Lurgan to the game, and because it was a march of lots of people carrying flags, they needed permission from the Parades Commission.
Fantastic.
So, you know, sometimes those swords can be turned into plowshares. And they marched to the game. Absolute crack. High quality sports related banter was had.
Aww.
Friendships were made. A lovely story starting on social media a few years ago. No, probably in the pre-Elon Musk days. I don't know, would it be allowed now? Would they even see the tweet now? And what a lovely story. And there's beautiful connections between them. And do you know what's going to happen, though? What absolutely has to happen is a movie has to be made, a fictional movie has to be made based on this story, where 2 teenage lovebirds who had been pen pals, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s, thought that they would connect at this match. They never met. And then at this game, both have been through several divorces since. Has to happen. I'm sorry. Look, I'll write the damn thing. And then, of course, Meryl Streep will play the German girl, the Fraulein.
Who could we get to play the Lurgan man?
Liam Neeson. It has to be. Absolutely. Liam Neeson, Meryl Streep, lovebirds united. Obviously, there has to be some jeopardy.
Of course.
That's where the Orange Order mark
comes in. I was going to say,
And then some bizarre, like, dissidents have to be up to something as well, too.
It is Lurgan. So.
Yeah, it could be on either side. There's both two sides at it. And, oh, just, it's absolutely...
It's primed for a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous. That's a great good news story. I also have a northern good news story as well. So, Port Stewart in County Derry has been named the best beach in the UK. Isn't that lovely?
Excellent.
County Derry, along that coast, people will know it from the Open for people who play golf. It's near Port Rush. But yeah, it's on the coast of the Atlantic Ocean. It's called Port Stewart Strand. And the title was awarded to the beach as part of the Sunday Times Best Beaches list. So there you are.
Do enough Mexicans, free staters go to Northern Ireland beaches? Are Northern Ireland beaches, because... My perception of any north-facing beach is that it's just going to be colder. Like, is it something, is it the island of Ireland's best-kept beachy secret?
I had never been to Port Stewart until I was in my 30s.
Okay.
So if you are of a nationalist tradition, you go to Donegal.
Why is that? Yeah. What's going on with you guys up there?
So yeah, people of a nationalist tradition, we are often, if you go to Downings or... Portsallan or any of those gorgeous Malin Head, any of those gorgeous towns in Donegal in July, they are teeming with Northerners.
Yeah.
And then, for instance, when I grew up and in my late teens, when I got Protestant friends, they would have went to places like Benone and Port Stewart, which are also absolutely gorgeous beaches. But traditionally, it's different now. But traditionally, when I was growing up, I would never have been in Port Rush. I would never have been in Port Stewart. As I said, I was never in parts of County Derry until I was in my 30s, which is very sad and an indictment of society in the north, although it is happily changing now. But yeah, Port Stewart Strand, absolutely gorgeous beach. A lot of surfing up around that part of the world. Wonderful. So delighted for them.
Let's replay that. One of my favourite, when after the peace process, the ads, you probably remember them, they used to play them down here about Northern Ireland tourism. And it was a lovely soft ad with a lovely, soft, welcoming Northern accent, but also that element of doubt. And the slogan was, Northern Ireland, you'll never know unless you go. And I was like, but is it good? Is it okay? Or
like, we're not promising anything.
Yeah, and I think that's it was always my favorite advertising slogan of those years, and they should bring it back.
There is a person, I have met the same sort of person, especially in Dublin, but you would meet not even middle-aged people, you meet people in their 30s and 40s, and they'll say to me, oh, I've never been to the north, as if it's some sort of thing they should be proud of, when really I just think it makes you the most boring person on earth. Like, imagine gleefully telling someone that you've never been to part of your own island.
My parents had their honeymoon in the north. They toured
what are they?
1965.
They're like, you know those people that chase twisters and tornadoes?
They went in 1965.
Oh, before
all that. And
before all that, though.
What you're describing there reminds me of a very funny Instagram video I saw yesterday about reactions in Coronation Street to people going to London.
Oh, yes, I've seen that. To London?
London? Why? The North? Why?
And our listener good news. So every week we do a bit of listener good news. If you have good news, please send it in this at afewscoops@goloudnow.com. I think they made that email address just so I would say it.
That's a microaggression.
Yeah, it is. So our listener good news this week. One is, after a breakup last year from a long-term partner, I finally fancy someone else and feel like I might find someone else now.
Is that someone else the same as someone else they fancy, or are we talking two separate people?
No, I would assume it's the same person. Okay. I can tell you now, if it's the first person you fancy after a long-term relationship, he's not the one.
Okay.
They're not the one.
Is that the one that's one too many?
That's one too many. But I would say, as someone who was in a very long-term relationship and then wasn't, just stay the course. It is, they're all out there. Like, it'll be grand. You do feel like you're going to die alone with a cat for a few years. I definitely felt that way.
Cat won't stick around.
I don't even like cats. I don't even know where the cat come from. But yeah, I don't think, to be honest, if it's the first person you fancy after the breakup, I don't think it's the one. But good to hear anyway. And the next one is probably relates to a lot of people, but someone said, a work project that has been like a pit in my stomach going to work every day is finally finished. I can sleep without spending hours worrying about every detail.
Sorry, that was just a WhatsApp I sent you about last week's episode. Sorry. I know we have to do this every week.
Colm Noy styling up aliases to send me criticism about work. Yeah, that's a good one. I feel like everybody's had that. And that's this week of A Few Scoops. I hope everyone has a glorious 12th weekend. I'm headed to Derry. And remember and send us your good news, Colm. Anything to add?
No, I've gig in Kilkenny this weekend at the Kilkenny Comedy Club. We're not promoting it necessarily, just letting you know things to do in Kilkenny.
Mm.
I'm looking forward to it.
We've talked a lot about Kilkenny in this episode.
A lot about Kilkenny. I love it. I'm half Kilkenny.
Oh, are you? There you are. I loved Kilkenny. I went for a night out with my mum once and barely remember it. A fantastic night. Shout out to Kilkenny and we'll see you next week.